Today, we look at the findings of a report that found Labour legally responsible for the harassment of Jewish members. Before we start, I want to warn you that this episode does include some upsetting examples of racism, including strong language. For years, journalists like The Guardian's deputy political editor Jessica Elgott found themselves writing about claims of anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. Claims that became so widespread, it was deemed necessary for the independent Equality and Human Rights Commission to investigate.
So I think one of the most important things to remember about this investigation is that lots of what we saw, perhaps in the public domain, was about things that people said on social media, on Facebook, sharing anti-Semitic memes or tweets which accused Jewish MPs of being a fifth column. And all of those are extremely bad. But the thing that really made this unique, according to the people making it the complaint to the HRC, was the regular experience of Jewish members and of Jewish MPs physically in local party meetings and what they experienced directly and personally from other members of the Labour Party. People who can tell you about those experiences and who did speak out about them were MPs like Ruth Smith.
Though I must warn the House that my fan base has shown scant regard for appropriate parliamentary language, so I apologise in advance. Hang yourself, you vile, treacherous Zionist Tory filth. You are a cancer of humanity. Ruth Smead is a Zionist. She has no shame and trades on the murder of Jews by Hitler, who the Zionists betrayed. Ruth Smead must surely be travelling first class to Tel Aviv with all that slush. After all, she's complicit in trying to bring Corbyn down. First job for Jeremy Corbyn tomorrow, expel the Zionist bicom smear hag bitch Ruth Smead from the party.
Luciana Berger.
I found myself on the front page of The Times in October 2018 because it came to light that the Labour Party was in fact aware of a physical threat made against me by a Labour Party member, and for 6 months didn't inform either myself or the police.
Margaret Hodge, you'll notice a lot of them are women.
I have never felt as nervous and frightened as I feel today at being a Jew. It feels that my party has given permission for anti-Semitism to go unchallenged.
But there were others too, including some on the left of the party, like Alex Sobel, who was, at the time, was a newly elected MP in Leeds.
I was subject to quite horrific abuse. I'll just give one example. Mr. Leonard on Channel 4's Facebook page said, "Why is this Jewish Zionazi speaking in the English Parliament?" Do you not agree with me that we need to tackle this, not just on social media and take more action there, but also right across the political spectrum in our own party? Yeah.
When the EHRC report emerged last month, Keir Starmer called it a day of shame for his party. Among other findings, it said that Labour was guilty of unlawful harassment of Jewish members in two cases. And investigators said that was the tip of the iceberg. But not everyone agreed about the scale of the problem, including former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, who, by the end of the day, had been suspended from his party. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. What does it mean for a political party to be investigated by the Equality and Human Rights Commission?
I mean, I think we shouldn't underestimate in any way how significant it is that the Equality and Human Rights Commission did an investigation into the Labour Party. They've never embarked upon a statutory inquiry into a major political party. In 2009, there was legal action against the British National Party, which is the far-right party, the big far-right party at the time, which was led by Nick Griffin. So this has never happened to any kind of major political party that could form the next government.
Jess, it feels as if this has been a long time coming. Not only have we been waiting months for the report, but there have been tensions over this really since Jeremy Corbyn became Labour leader, bringing in many more supporters from the left. There was a surge in complaints about anti-Semitism. but also a view among some close to him that the issue was being weaponized by his opponents. Tell me about the type of experiences Jewish politicians describe to you.
Something that members of the Jewish Labour movement and Labour MPs have said to me is that they would see someone or hear someone in a local Labour Party say something like, the Zionist puppet masters, Rothschild bankers who control the world are pulling the strings of the government and the Israeli lobby are funding these MPs who are trying to take down Jeremy Corbyn. And normally, if someone's told that what they have said is racist and someone tries to explain it, they may say, oh, I didn't realise. Or they might say, I didn't say that. But they would actually find people say, yes, I definitely said that. I totally stand by it. That's what I think. And I think that that rising denialism was one of the things that really contributed to people feeling like another body needed to intervene, an independent examination of the Labour Party's homework needed to be made to give independent verification that this was real.
Do we know what Corbyn made of all of this?
So Jeremy Corbyn has had allegations about some of his conduct for a long time, and should be said that he has consistently denied he's anti-Semitic. He's made his name as an anti-racism campaigner. He was a long-term campaigner against apartheid. He spoke about his mother being at the Battle of Cable Street, where Jews faced off against Oswald Mosley's fascists. But there have been occasions where people have said that he potentially has a bit of a blind spot when it comes to anti-Semitism on the left. So the most famous example was Jeremy Corbyn's defence on Facebook, it was a Facebook comment, of a mural in East London by the artist Mia One, which showed what appears to be a group of hook-nosed Jews, Jewish bankers, playing a kind of monopoly game on the backs of workers. And he basically says, I don't understand why the mural is being taken down. Jeremy Corbyn did apologise for that comment.
And I was kind of worried that the idea that somebody put a mural up should be taken down. And I sort of asked some questions about that. And actually, the mural was taken down. And I was perhaps too hasty in my judgment on that. But it has been taken down, and I'm glad it has.
But a number of people I spoke to, Jewish Labour members at the time, said that they felt like they could tell from his apology that he didn't really understand or want to be apologising for it. He didn't really get why what he'd said was offensive.
Do you now find it anti-Semitic?
I think it should never have been put up.
There are obviously strong views on the left opposing policies of the Israeli government, particularly when it comes to Palestine. Is that relevant to the increase in anti-Semitism that we've seen since Corbyn became leader?
Of course, lots of people in the Labour Party feel very strongly about the situation in Israel-Palestine, very strongly pro-Palestinian because of the way that Palestinians are systematically discriminated against by the Israeli government. And again, there's no reason why any support for that should be anti-Semitic. Indeed, you know, there are great champions of the Palestinian cause in the Labour Party, people like Lisa Nandy, who's been chair of Labour Friends of Palestine, who been outspoken advocates against anti-Semitism in the party. But there also have been people whose criticism of the Israeli government has lapsed into perhaps blaming Jews in the UK for not taking a stand too much against the Israeli government, lumping together Zionists, which many Jews in the UK believe describes them as people who believe in the right of the Jewish people to a homeland, and using Zionists as a term of abuse that has led, you know, that led to this kind of toxic atmosphere around confusing Jewish identity and support for the Israeli state.
This report has been hanging over the Labour Party for a year now. We've had a chance to look at its 100 pages. What conclusion did they reach?
What it says is that it aimed to determine whether the Labour Party committed a breach of the Equality Act related to Jewish ethnicity or Judaism against its members, associates or guests through the actions of its employees or agents. And that's basically, were Jewish members of the Labour Party discriminated against by officials in the party because of their ethnicity. And it also looked at whether the party had ever taken proper steps to rectify this, including to try to implement the recommendations of other reports. Remember, there have been other investigations into the Labour Party and anti-Semitism. So the three areas where they said that Labour failed and committed unlawful acts was unlawful harassment of its members because of their ethnicity, because they were Jewish, that there was political interference in the complaints process, and that the party failed to provide any adequate training or indeed an adequate complaints process, which amounted to indirect discrimination against Jewish members.
Okay, let's take those one by one and start with harassment. They highlighted two cases, that of Ken Livingstone and a councillor, Pam Bromley. Why were they named?
So it's important to say that these two cases were not the only two cases of anti-Semitism that the EHRC found, but they said that as a sample of 70 complaint investigation files, these were two cases where Labour were considered legally responsible for what these two individuals were saying. Ken Livingstone, as the former mayor of London and a member of the party's National Executive Committee, which is its governing body, as well as Pam Bromley, who was a Labour councillor. There were 18 borderline cases where there wasn't enough evidence to conclude that the Labour Party was legally responsible for their conduct. But those did include people like local councillors, local election candidates, and people who held offices in local parties, such as regional secretaries.
And on those two cases, what were they found to have done?
So in Ken Livingstone's case, the EHRC says that Ken Livingstone repeatedly denied that posts by Naz Shah were anti-Semitic. She had reposted a Facebook image suggesting that Israel, Jews in Israel, be relocated to the United States as a way of kind of solving the problems in the Middle East. And she admitted that that idea of kind of deporting Jews was anti-Semitic. She's sort of seen actually as someone who responded in the right way to accusations.
I accept and understand that the words I used caused upset and hurt to the Jewish community, and I deeply regret that. Anti-Semitism is racism, full stop.
She said that she was ignorant in the comments that she was making, and she spent a lot of time with Jewish communal organisations understanding why those comments were hurtful.
I am grateful and very thankful for the support and advice I have received from many Jewish friends and colleagues, advice I intend to act upon.
But then what happened was that Ken Livingstone, the former mayor of London, jumped in the defence of Naz Shah, including saying things like Hitler was a Zionist, very famously.
Disgusting racist.
Then being chased around Westminster by the then Labour MP, John Mann.
You're a lying racist.
Really? Why don't you go and check
your
history?
A Nazi apologist. A Nazi apologist. A Nazi apologist. You're a disgusting Nazi apologist, Livingstone.
And the EHRC said that Shah's comments were not legitimate criticism of the Israeli government, and neither was Ken Livingstone's support for those comments. Also, essentially, that there was many examples of interference from the leader's office in Livingstone's case, including even blocking any sort of disciplinary interview with him after he was suspended.
Was that the same in the case of Pam Bromley?
So Pam Bromley, the difference between her case and other councillors where complaints about them were submitted to the HRC is that she was using Labour Party Facebook pages to make the comments, including about fifth columnists and fake accusations of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. So the EHRC concluded that she was acting as an official of the party when she made those comments.
OK, let's talk about political interference. First, can you explain what route complaints were meant to go through?
So one of the important things to say about a complaints process in a political party is that it's inherently politicised. It's a political party. These people are their political allies or otherwise. And there's never been a completely fair process for complaints in any political party that exists ever because they're inherently political animals. But the way the Labour Party dealt with anti-Semitism complaints was found to be particularly discriminatory. The EHRC reviewed 70 complaints between 2016 and 2019 and found in those that there were 23 instances of political interference by staff directly from the leader's office. That included examples of interference all through the different stages of the complaints handling process.
And a really interesting example of that was when Corbyn himself was accused of supporting that anti-Semitic mural that you mentioned. What happened then?
So they found that there was direct political interference in this case where people made complaints about Jeremy Corbyn himself, and staff from Corbyn's office called for the case to be dismissed. They told the party's governance and legal unit, which was the unit responsible for investigating the complaints, that it falls well below the threshold required for investigation, so surely we can just dismiss it. Staff from Corbyn's office also amended what was going to be the written response to the complaints. And even though, you know, there were stated processes within Labour at the time, which said that they should not be involved in complaints, and yet they were.
For those on the left, and particularly those in the leader's office at the time, there was a sense that these attacks were being driven by people who hated Corbyn anyway and wanted him out, and that they were therefore being politically driven. Is there any truth to that? And is that why Corbyn's office were intervening in the complaints?
I don't want to say what the motivations for interference were, but is it true that there was significant problem with anti-Semitism in the party and that there was a culture of denialism? You know, evidently from the EHRC report, that was the case. But is it true as well that people used those complaints of anti-Semitism, Corbyn's opponents within the party, and also people on the right in the Conservative Party as well, particularly, that they used that as a way to attack Jeremy Corbyn? Yes, I mean, you can walk and chew gum at the same time.
And the final legal issue Labour is going to have to address is the accusation that you mentioned, that they failed to provide adequate training to those handling complaints of anti-Semitism. What's striking, reading the report, is that the party had put resources and training in place to deal with sexual abuse complaints. Why didn't they do the same for anti-Semitism?
Yeah, so one of the interesting things about the report is it said that the party had acted very swiftly in the wake of the Me Too scandal, where there were complaints against, in fact, all political parties about sexual harassment, and that the Labour Party had sort of acted exemplary in that. And they hadn't managed to do the same thing in anti-Semitism. They hadn't managed to provide adequate training. I mean, one of the problems with that was a total breakdown of relationships with the Jewish Labour movement, who had originally been the group providing anti-Semitism training, as you might expect. They found themselves cut out of the process. Corbyn's office would say they didn't want to work with them. They say that they weren't asked or the terms were unacceptable. So therefore, the training itself became something that didn't have the support of the main Jewish affiliate, which you can imagine caused problems in itself.
Coming up, Labour suspends its former leader, Jeremy Corbyn. Let's talk about Keir Starmer, both how he responded to it, but also what progress had already been made before this report came out, because he presumably already knew what was in it.
So the party had obviously begun making changes before this was published, but Keir Starmer has made it a kind of main mission for him, I think particularly this year, because I assume the secret hope is they can move on from it after that, to overhaul the process, to get this independent process in place, and to make a very public stand against anti-Semitism.
And it did come on the 29th of October.
Also in today's programme, Labour is braced for the Quality Watchdog's report on the anti-Semitism row that dogged the party.
But despite Starmer and Corbyn being forewarned, it became a chaotic day. Tell me what happened.
So Jeremy Corbyn's statement drops at 10:30. So Jeremy Corbyn said, "One anti-Semite is one too many, but the scale of the problem was also dramatically overstated for political reasons by our opponents inside and outside the party, as well as by much of the media. That combination hurt Jewish people and must never be repeated." And Starmer is due to give a press conference at 11 o'clock.
"I found this report hard to read, and it is a day of shame for the Labour Party. We have failed Jewish people."
Keir Starmer's response was, not only if you are anti-Semitic do you have no place in the Labour Party, but you also have no place in the Labour Party if you indulge in this culture of denialism, that it was exaggerated for political gain. And he made a very kind of strong public statement about that.
"And if, after all the pain, all the grief and all the evidence in this report, there are still those who think there's no problem with anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, that it's all exaggerated or a factional attack, then frankly, you are part of the problem too. And you should be nowhere near the Labour Party either.
Obviously, Keir has got pre-prepared words. People around Corbyn said that Starmer had promised to tell them what they were going to say in advance. And, you know, perhaps if they'd have known how strongly he was going to go on this denialism aspect, they might have tweaked what Corbyn was going to say. In between Starmer speak, Labour's deputy leader, Angela Rayner, someone who, you know, was promoted for the first time into the shadow cabinet by Jeremy Corbyn, served closely with him, rings Jeremy Corbyn and says, "You've got to retract this. You've got to say this isn't what you meant. Say sorry." Yeah, Jeremy Corbyn's meant to be doing a clip to camera as well as releasing this statement. And he says, you know, I'm not going to do that, but I'll clarify what I meant, which is that the public perception of how many anti-Semites were in the party was much greater than the numbers actually were. Obviously, Keir Starmer's asked repeatedly in his press conference about Jeremy Corbyn. He's got a bit of a problem because the EHRC has literally just said there shouldn't be any political interference at all in the complaints process. So, you know, him standing there giving the opinion, all he can do is kind of repeat himself and say, you know, it's as bad.
What are you going to do now to show that you are serious and that Jeremy Corbyn has no place in or near the Labour Party?
Kate, I'll look carefully at what Jeremy Corbyn has said in full. But I've said a moment ago, and I'll say it again, those that deny this a problem are part of the problem.
Within 2 hours, David Evans, who's the party's new general secretary, has suspended Jeremy Corbyn. And, you know, obviously that throws the whole day into chaos.
Why do you think Corbyn responded in that way?
I think because he genuinely believes it. I think he believes that the scale of the problem was dramatically overstated and that it was for political reasons. And they cite a poll that was done by Servation, which, you know, looked at the perception of anti-Semitism in the party. And the poll itself, you know, you can pick arguments in it, but essentially has one finding that says that 34% of the party was anti-Semitic, according to people's perceptions, when in fact it was something like, you know, 0.1%, you know, a tiny, tiny figure compared to what the public perception was. And they say that that was, you know, what he was referring to when he said that it was dramatically overstated by the media, that had led to this skewed perception of the party that he led.
How did you feel when you heard you'd been suspended from the party?
Very shocked and very disappointed. I've been in the Labour Party all my life.
Given how anticipated this report on anti-Semitism was, and given how serious this issue is and has been for the Labour Party for so many years, I have to say, I find it hard to believe that Corbyn's response when it finally landed was really driven by the findings of a survey based on 600 respondents. What was really going on?
I mean, I think that they genuinely believe that the problem was overstated. They believe that it was a very small number of people who were genuinely anti-Semitic. You know, that there was a problem with anti-Semitism, and that, you know, the statement does say that. It says that it's abhorrent, it's wrong. But he believes, and the statement says this, that the anti-Semitism in the Labour Party is just the same as anti-Semitism in society. That it's just the same as in any large organisation. There is a lot of people in an organisation, and therefore some of them will hold abhorrent views. He doesn't see it as a personal failure.
And what does the EHRC report say about that? Does it find a specific and unique problem on the left and in his Labour Party?
It's hard to know about the scale of the complaints because the process was so chaotic. But just as one example, the Jewish Labour Movement set up a kind of filtering system where they collected evidence of anti-Semitic incidents, particularly within local parties rather than just social media. And they received 800 complaints, and they submitted 500 pages of evidence to the EHRC, including from 70 whistleblowers who spoke to them about how the party dealt with complaints inside and the influx that they saw. And so obviously from those stats alone, we can conclude there must have been a significant rise in incidents. So the EHSE said that, you know, despite the Labour Party having made a commitment to zero tolerance for anti-Semitism, it took a totally insufficient approach to tackling anti-Semitism. And it was a lack of willingness. They identified that it was a lack of willingness to tackle the extent of the problem rather than having an inability to do that. And it also laid the blame ultimately with Jeremy Corbyn, saying that a leader of the party at the time, given the extent of the failings, particularly in political interference within the leader of the opposition's office, which was Jeremy Corbyn, he is ultimately responsible and accountable for what happened during that time.
It seems to me that there's a lot of work to do to reconcile with Jewish members who have understandably lost trust in the party and many more who have left Labour entirely. What has the reaction been from Jewish people you've spoken to?
I mean, I think, you know, the report says that trust has to be at the heart of a party's relationship with its members and also with the wider general public. And it shows that there has been a total breakdown of trust between the Labour Party, its members, and the Jewish community. And obviously there was that horrendous defeat in 2019. 93% of Jews, according to one poll, said they wouldn't vote Labour. And, you know, this has been a party that has historically been associated with the Jewish community and Jewish socialists. There's a rich tradition of Jewish socialism. Starmer's fairly bold response to this report, I think that has probably gone a long way in rebuilding trust with the community. The Jewish Labour movement, I think, couldn't be more happy with the way that Keir's responded. There's the campaign against anti-Semitism, which was one of the main complainants to the EHRC, said that the EHRC report couldn't be better if they'd written it themselves. You know, it's still going to be a long time, I think, before trust is fully rebuilt. And I think that is also because people feel like their local Labour parties may still not be a welcoming place for Jewish members. But that's all about what Keir Starmer's task ahead is in trying to rebuild trust and change the culture of the party.
That was Jessica Elgott, the deputy political editor at The Guardian. She and many other colleagues have written about the EHRC report and the broader question of anti-Semitism within Labour. Do go to the website to find news stories, features and opinion pieces on this. Yesterday, we had news that large-scale trials of a COVID-19 vaccine candidate being produced by Pfizer had suggested it was 90% effective. Fingers crossed, good news. You can read Sarah Bosley's story about it on the website. And if you want to hear more about the Pfizer vaccine and others, then do listen to our Today in Focus episode last week with The Observer science editor Robin McKee called Light at the End of the Lockdown Tunnel. That's it for today. My thanks to Jessica Elgott and to you for listening. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Cassin. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.